Our lesson this morning is our future as a church. Visions and hopes. And so we're going to get to the point where you write down your vision and your hopes for the church here. For our future. So when we get to that, I'll give you the opportunity to do that. As we think about our future as a church, it's imperative that we talk about this subject, visions and hope. Hopes, dreams, aspirations, all of these different terms we use to describe this idea. Psalm 78, 5-8, that was read just a little bit ago, points out to us the need for us to look to the future, to consider the future, to plan for the future, to have hopes and dreams and goals and a vision. Notice in that passage, for he, that's God, of course, through Moses, established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children. Well, why did he command them to make them known to their children? Why, simply, he wanted to pass things on from generation to generation. He wanted the teaching to be done. He wanted the law to be passed on. That the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children. This is one of the biggest problems that the church has. And it's one of the biggest problems that the church has always had. Passing on from generation to generation the teaching. Even of those who themselves grew up in Christian homes and then married and had families, so few remain faithful. And by the third or fourth generations, most families that in one generation may have been strong, faithful leaders in the church, in 3 to 4 generations, none of their descendants are even members of the church. It happens time and time again. Something is missing. Somehow, some of that teaching is not being passed on from one generation to the next. This is essential for the future of the church. He says that they might set their hope in God. We need to have hopes, we need to have dreams and all of these things, but we've got to be sure that those hopes are set in God. And by that, of course, here he's referring to the fact that they actually trust in God and count on Him, and we need to do that, but we also need to make sure that any hopes or dreams or plans for the future that we make are in accordance with God's will. Now, so many times people have all sorts of ideas, and they may even sound like good ideas to other people, but they're not ideas that God would be pleased with. Just because an idea sounds like a good idea doesn't mean it's a godly idea. God has set some parameters. And you know what? By what? We could probably fill the place up if we offered everybody that came $100. I heard about one church that offered, they said, everybody come and somebody will have $1,000 under their seat. Well, you get a lot of folks to come like that. But is that the way God intended for us to draw people to Him? No, that's not what He anticipated. Now, sometimes some of those gimmick kind of things might get people to show up on, but is it going to be something that's going to interest them in the gospel? Of course, a lot of those churches aren't even teaching and preaching the gospel anyway. They're teaching and preaching some other thing. I heard of one church that went out in the community. It's one of the largest churches in the United States now. And it's only about 15 to 20 years old. But when they went out in the community and passed out a questionnaire, what would you like to have a church? And they got all the responses back and tallied them up, and they said, okay, well, that's what we're going to do then. Well, you can get a lot of folks to come that way. I mean, you know, we had some cheerleaders up here and skip the outfits, we'd probably get a lot more men to come to church. If we put on a big Broadway production, well, we could probably get a lot of folks to come to that. Now, there are a lot of things you can do to get people to come. But that's not what's supposed to draw them. Jesus said, if I be lifted up from the earth, I will draw all men in. If they're not willing to come for the cross, then they're not willing to come. They may go to parties, and they may go to football games, and they may go to school, and they may go to work, and they may go to all sorts of other things. But when it comes to the church, we come for the cross. He goes on to say that they would put their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments. That's one of the other things that's becoming a problem in the church, is that a lot of second-generation Christians, those whose parents were Christians and then they grew up going to church and became Christians, a lot of them aren't holding on to the commandments of God. They are wanting to be more like the denominations around them. Same thing happened to Israel. You remember when they wanted a king? Why did they want a king? To be like the nations around. We'll be like the other nations. And of course the idolatry slipped into the Jewish worship because they wanted to be like the other nations around them. And when we look at the denominational world and we see denominational churches that have big, huge auditoriums that are full with hundreds and hundreds of people, even thousands of people, it might be tempting to some to say, well, you know, if we were doing like what they're doing, if we'd have a piano, if we had a choir, if we had this or that or the other thing like they do, maybe we could get more people. And it's a temptation that we have to watch out for, because we must not forget the works of God but keep His commandments. And then he says that they might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation. And you know what generation he's talking about there? Those who died in the wilderness. They were so stubborn and rebellious against God, questioned everything, and murmured and complained about everything He did for them. That was a generation that set not their heart aright, and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. But we've got to be careful, lest we become that generation and thus train our children to be like that. But as we think about the future, we know eventually the time is going to come when none of us who are here today are going to be here. For some, that's a few years off. For some, a few decades. For some of these little ones, you know, it may be 80 years down the road. But the fact of the matter is that given enough time, none of us will be here. In the first century, the church was growing by leaps and bounds. The apostles were there. They had sound preaching and teaching. And yet, in a few generations, the church had practically disappeared as it was built and established by Christ and the apostles. It had become, in just a short time, it had apostatized. It had become something it was never intended. For the most part. Now that doesn't mean that there weren't still congregations who remained faithful. But by the 300s, which is some 250 years or so after Christ, it had become an organized state religion of the Roman Empire. And it became then the Roman Catholic Church. But they left those first principles and those first foundations that had been laid. We've got to beware, because it's easy for that to happen. It's easy to drift. And it's easy from generation to generation. If we do not impress upon the next generation, upon the new Christians, upon the converts, how important these things are. Why is this important? Why is the name of the church important? Why is it important that we don't use this? Why is it important we take the Lord's Supper on the first day of every week instead of just at Christmas and Easter? Why are these things important? We've got to impress that upon others. But from that standpoint, in order to remain faithful to God, we've got to do those things. But we're going to look this morning more along the lines of the dream. You know, dreamers or visionaries are people who take the present and then they imagine a future that could grow from that present into something new and bigger and better. Now, of course, when it comes to the doctrine of the church, there is nothing new or bigger or better than what the scriptures have given us for the past 2,000 years. But when it comes to the church, it can be bigger. It can be better. And there are new things that we can do, new ways that we can spread the gospel, new ways that we can have of accomplishing the same task. You think about it, hundreds of years ago, they didn't have song books, but they could still sing songs. In the first century, they didn't have church buildings, but they could still worship. But isn't it nice to have, Tyrone thanks in his prayer for the building, that we can have a place to come and worship. It sure is. It's wonderful. And we see just this idea of dreaming, of visions and hope. We can see a little bit of it sitting right behind this building out there in the form of that fellowship hall. I remember when we first started talking about that, we were talking about, just making a little barbecue pit, maybe, and put a couple of picnic tables, maybe a little shelter. And we were talking about, maybe spend $1,000 or two on it. But as the dream kept going, and as more people imagined what could happen and what new and bigger and better things could occur, it grew. And that dream then became a reality in that respect in the form of that building. Well, the same thing of the congregation here. Somebody up in North Alabama had the goal, had the dream, had the hope, and the vision of seeing the church grow here in this community. And so they sent down some workers, and they helped the church to get a foothold. And on more than one occasion, they had to help along the way, because there were struggles. But if somebody doesn't look to the future, if you don't have some dreamers, some visionaries, somebody with a hope for the future and a plan, then there are some dangers that can occur. We've got to grow bigger and better, or else the choices are to remain just as we are, which we know can't happen, because as we age and die, you can't remain as you are. That's not a possibility. So the only other possibility besides growing bigger and better is to shrink smaller and worse. Well, that's not much of a choice, is it? It shouldn't be. It should be pretty straightforward which choice to make. The dreams and the hopes. Some of these dreams, some of these hopes that people have, and people have dreams and hopes in all fields, all sorts of areas of their life. Some people dream about owning a certain car, so they go out and they work and they save their money until they can afford that particular car. Or some people have a dream house, and so they go out and they work to build that house just the way they want it. So they're not living in a house that somebody else built. They're living in one they designed it just the way they wanted it. And then they find out that they didn't want it the way they thought they wanted it. But that happens almost every time. But then they have these dreams and these hopes. Well, something like that has to become part of our church feeling and emotion and attitude. We've got to have this. We've got to have dreams. We've got to have hopes. We've got to have plans for the future. So in the case, let's look at the case for these dreams and these hopes. Nehemiah is a perfect example of this. Nehemiah, of course, had heard about Jerusalem and it lying in ruin. He had wept about it, but he didn't think there was anything he could do about it. But then he determined he was going to try to do something about it. He spoke to the king and said, I want to go back to Jerusalem and I want to rebuild it. And the king not only let Nehemiah and several others go with him, but he also provided them with the materials that they needed to work on the project. If you don't ask, you don't get. Jesus said, ask and you shall receive. Well, I find that true. I spoke to some about wanting us to be able to start a CD ministry, and I asked, and I received. So next I'm going to ask somebody to start thinking about a new church sign. That's next. You know, if you don't, it doesn't hurt to ask, does it? Jesus said, if you ask, you shall receive. Now, you don't always get what you want, but if you ask, you receive. And that CD recorder, by the way, is on back order, so I don't know how long it's going to be. Maybe another month before they get any more in. But we'll get them eventually, and we'll get started on that. We already got the CDs and the labels and all of those things they've already sent, but the CD recorder itself is on back order, so we'll get that when we get it. But as we look at these things and we think about these things, planning, hoping, Nehemiah asked. So we've got to ask. We've got to have an idea, have a goal, and then ask. What can we do to accomplish this? How can this happen? And Nehemiah asked, and the king sent him. And when he got there, one of the first things that he did, in verse 13 of Nehemiah chapter 2, says, I went out by night. And I viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates were consumed by fire. And he walked all the way around the city of Jerusalem. He looked at the whole thing. And then he started making his dream. He started having his vision for what this wall should look like. He had seen what it looked like now. And then he started to make some plans for what it ought to look like. And he says then in verse 17, he says, you see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then I told them of the hand of my God which was good upon me, as also the king's words that had spoken unto me. And they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. You see, we've got to ask, and then we've got to encourage others to get involved. We've got to have a plan. Now, they talk about this in politics all the time. One party or the other, they just don't have a plan for the future, or they don't have any goals, or they don't have any message that they're getting out to the people. We've got to look to the future and have a goal and see it out there and imagine ways that we can accomplish that. Ways that we can make that dream a reality and then get other people excited about it and get other people involved in it. We've got to do that. Nehemiah shows the power of a dream. The city of Jerusalem was rebuilt because of not just the dream. The dream's the start, but you've got to follow through with it to make that dream a reality. And he did the hard work on the other side. You know, some people, dreaming, talk's cheap, and it's easy to dream and imagine. Well, that's true. It is, for some people anyway, easy to imagine these things and to dream these things. But you've got to put that hard work into it. You've got to do the planning, and then you've got to do the work to accomplish it. You've got to work at those things. Well, the disciples of Jesus show the power of hope. Do you remember what happened after Jesus' crucifixion? Well, they were locked up in a room, hidden away, afraid that Jewish leaders were going to come after them next. And then old Peter, he said, well, no point sitting around here all the time. I'm going to go back fishing. How about the rest of you guys? Y'all going to go fishing? And so they'd given up. They didn't have the hope. But after that, when they were out there fishing, Jesus appeared to them. And after Jesus appeared to them, they started to have some hope again. And after he had spent some time with them, assuring him that he had risen from the dead, and then he ascended back to heaven, and you know, their attitude changed from being a group of people that locked themselves in a room for fear to being a group of people that went all over the world telling others about Jesus and his resurrection. Hope is a powerful weapon. We've got to have some hope. We've got to have some hope. Hope is almost as important as faith. What did Paul say in 1 Corinthians 13? That these three remain. Faith, hope, and love. Those three things are important. He wouldn't have mentioned those three things if they weren't important. Now he said the greatest of these is love. and love certainly is the greatest, but faith and hope are pretty important, even if love is the greatest. The other two aren't that far behind. But we see these disciples, they were down in the mouth, they were droopy, they were depressed and sad, but when they knew that Jesus was alive again, that hope spurred them on to be that group of people that once were referred to as those who had turned the world upside down. Of course, the fact of the matter is they had just turned it right side up again. But that's the attitude. They had changed things. They had made an impact. What about us? Are we going to make an impact? Well, now, this church needs dreams and hopes for the future. There's no doubt about it. If we don't have a dream, then we're just stuck with what we've got. There's no hope. There's nothing to look forward to. You ever going to bed on Christmas night is kind of a depressing thing, or maybe the night after your birthday for a kid. You remember when you were a kid? And oh boy, you look forward to your birthday, or you look forward to Christmas, that whole, and then when it happened, there was just kind of a big letdown. There was nothing to hope for the next day. So, I mean, it just, and especially if you didn't get all the things you want, you know, the night before, you were so excited you could hardly sleep because you had those hopes, you had those dreams, you had those expectations. And then, even if you got everything that you wanted, which I never did, but some kids today do, boy, they get a bunch more than they want a lot of times. But even if you got everything you wanted, the next night it was a letdown because now there's nothing to hope for. There's nothing to dream about. It's great to achieve and to have success and get what you want, but if that's the end of it, then depression usually follows. We've got to be sure that we always have something in the future to look for. That's why the hope of heaven is so important to us as Christians. That's the final hope. That's the great dream. And we want to make that dream a reality at the end of our lives or when the Lord comes back, whichever comes first. But we want to make that a reality. But in the meantime, we've got to keep some dreams and some hopes in front of us. Because every church that ever felt like it had accomplished everything it needed to accomplish soon withered and died. We've got to keep moving forward. And if we don't have a dream, if we don't have hopes for the future, if we don't have a vision of things bigger and better yet to come, then we're also demonstrating our doubt in God's plans, because God planned to build a kingdom that would never fall, a kingdom that would continue to grow, a kingdom in Daniel that's portrayed as being one that would encompass all other kingdoms. That was God's dream. That was His hope. Do we have that kind of hope, or do we demonstrate our doubt and things like that? We can't do that. No. I know that sounds like a good idea. We can't accomplish that. Are we negative at the time? Or do we look for the positive? What can we do? We can accomplish this. We'll work on it. We'll get there. We may not do it today, and we may not do it tomorrow, but we're going to keep working at it until we get there. Let's look at some secret dreams. Here's where the interactive part comes, and I'll give you these questions. And you don't necessarily have to fill them out right now, but I do want everybody to think about these and write something down. You don't have to give it to me, but I want you to have a dream, a vision, a hope. Let's look at the first one. How do you want this church to be known? And by that we mean by those in the community, by the denominational churches around us, by other congregations of the Lord's church. How do you want this church to be known? You know, some congregations are known worldwide because of the work they do. And some congregations aren't even known in the community where they are. Think about the difference there. What do we want to be? How do we want to be known? The second question is, describe how you see this church in 10 years. What do you think? What size is the congregation going to be in? What works are we going to be supporting? What about our faithful? Are we going to still be being faithful? Or are we going to be off into apostasy? What about the zeal? Are people going to be on fire for the Lord in this congregation? Or are we going to be sound asleep? What about your involvement? What are you going to be doing? What role are you going to be filling in the church in 10 years? And you can stretch that on out for yourself, especially for those of you who are younger. What about in 20 years? What about 30 years? Where am I going to be? Am I going to be growing as a Christian? Am I going to be one of the leaders in the church by then? Now, you know, at some point, that leadership has to be passed on. It happens in every group, not just in the church, but I mean, in everything. You know, kings died, and somebody had to be the new king. Presidents serve out their term, got to elect a new president. Well, the elders will either, because of health or because of death, at some point, it'll get to the point where the two that we have now won't be able to serve. Are we going to have men to be able to fill those roles? So there are a lot of things like that. We've got a lot of women who are teaching classes and a lot of young women. Are you going to be able to step in and fill in those shoes? Who's going to teach? We got the ladies' class this afternoon. Men's and ladies' classes. And somebody, one of the ladies is going to be teaching the class. Well, who's going to keep stepping into those shoes in the future years? And then the third question, and this may be the hardest, but it's also in a lot of ways the most important. Describe how you see this church in 100 years. That's harder. But what about it? What size is it going to be? What works will they be supporting then? And I say they because none of us are going to be here. See, we talked about earlier that we're not going to be here forever. What about this? In 100 years, most likely all of us, even the little babies, I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, but rarely, you know, for the most part, we can figure that in 100 years all of us are going to be gone. Who's going to be here? Some of these young kids, grandkids, if you think about it, when? Your grandson going to be one of the elders in 100 years? How about you, Veronica? One of your granddaughters going to be teaching the ladies' class or married to the preacher? Or I mean, you know, that's 100 years away, but what do we imagine the church here looking like then? Is it still going to be faithful? Is it going to be zealous? Are the members going to be involved? Or is it going to be just completely apostatized or dead? And if, you know, the building's still standing here and closed up. You know, I don't know what it was. Down there by Black Warrior? As you go down toward Meridian, and just next to Black Warrior, there's an old church building of some kind. I don't know what church building that is. Old, off in the wood, you know, trees growing up, vines growing all up. Have you seen that building? Right there on the highway. I don't know what that was. It looked like a church building. It may not have been, but it looked like one to me. I wonder what that was. I wonder what happened to the people who had a church that met there. Now, I don't, for all I know, it was the First Baptist Church, and they just moved to their new big building down the street. I don't know, but whenever I see an old building like that that's abandoned, I wonder. There's a group of people who they failed to pass it on from generation to generation. So what do you see for the church here in 100 years? Think about those things. As we think about what kind of church we want to have, and what the church needs to be named. Here are some examples of some others that have answered that question. Some said they wanted a confident, exciting, and excited church. Some said they wanted a fellowshipping church. Some said a church that reaches out to the community A church that seeks to do God's will. A church that meets people's needs. A church that displays the fruit of the Spirit. A church known by the love for one another. A church that's a focal point of the community. A forgiving church. A soul-saving church. An uplifting church. A church that speaks out. A church willing to make sacrifices, a praying church, a church that stands for what's right. And you can go on, you know, everything. And none of these are necessary. You know, there's nothing either right or wrong here. It'd be great if the church could be all of those things. I mean, that all sounds so good. So, we have to think about what we're going to do to work toward making some of those kinds of things realities. What can I do? What can you do to help this come to pass? I have my own list of dreams and hopes for the church here. I'd like to see a church that develops many and varied ways of proclaiming the gospel. I want to see us getting the gospel out there. We're already doing that some, you know, with the house-to-house, heart-to-heart. And we get some articles in the newspapers, and of course we have the preaching and gospel meetings and these kinds of things. We've got to find more ways. We've got to find more ways to get it out there to everybody. A church that seeks the lost and is willing to do the hard work of changing people's lives. A church that takes spiritual and biblical education beyond the walls of the church building. You know, some churches are faithful they're faithfully keeping it in the building, and they never share it anywhere else. They never spread beyond those walls. They never have home Bible studies. I want to see the church here doing that. A church in which the members continue to grow and develop, and in which we work hard to equip every member to participate in a valid ministry and serve the Lord in a valid way, in the right way, in a good way. Not by gossiping about one another. A church that will take responsibility to plant other congregations. I'd like to see us get to that way. I know we're still small, but we're talking about dreams. We're talking about hopes. We're talking about a vision for the future. I'd like to see that. What about a church that comes to be known for the quality of its leadership and for its ability to train and equip elders for the future? I'd like to see that. A church that trains young men to preach and evangelize and serve as elders. I've talked to the elders about, you know, I go to the Future Preacher Training Camp in Virginia, and I've talked to them about how much I want to see us get one of those started right here, you know, in our area, and be involved in that, supporting that. Not just the young men of our congregation, but young men from other area congregations, to get them equipped. They say that every year we lose 600 preachers, and every year our preaching schools only produce 300. Now you do the math. That means there are 300 less preachers every year. Who's hurt by that? You think it's the churches of 500 or 1,000 that don't get a preacher? No. They find one because they pay the big bucks to get one. It's the small churches. The churches of 25 and 50 and 75, they're the ones that wind up without a preacher because we don't have enough preachers to go around. And one of the things to train, and then that's just of the churches that we already have. What about establishing new works? Got a letter from Melvin from the School of Preaching that he was talking about one of the young men who's about to graduate has started a work in a particular city, and he's been evangelizing in that community and things like that. You know, that's a hard work. But it's an important one. Being a missionary in this, that's hard. But it's important. None of us would be Christians if it hadn't been for some missionary work somewhere along the line. Somebody had to go out there and get things started. A church, I didn't finish that one, and to train young women to teach and train their children up, and to serve Christ in every way they can. And also then a church that turns on the light for people in darkness. So Jesus said, you're a city set on the hill. Are we? Are we the light of the world? It better be. In short, a church that serves as salt and light, a church that changes the world and allows people to realize the difference in the Lord's church and the denominations around us. That's what I'd like to see. Then we have to ask ourselves, what business am I in? What business am I in? Now you might say, well, I'm in the insurance business, or I drive a truck for a living, or I work on a farm, or I'm a teacher, or I'm retired. Well, I'm not talking about that kind of business. What business are you in? Jesus said, I must be about my Father's business. Regardless of what we do in the secular world, we're in the business of reaching out to the lost. We're in the business of getting ourselves to heaven and helping others get there as well. That's our business. We get clear on what our business is, we'll do the things that others just dream about. So let's do some dreaming, some hoping about the future, and be sure to take hold of the vision to know Christ and to make Him known. Philippians 3:8 and following, Paul says, "Yea, doubtless, and I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and do count them but dung, that I may win Christ, and be found in Him, not having my own righteousness, which is of the law, but that which is through the faith of Christ, the righteousness which is of God by faith, that I may know Him, and the power of His resurrection, and the fellowship of His suffering, being made conformable unto His death. If by any means I might attain unto the resurrection of the dead. Not as though I had already attained, either were already perfect, but I follow after it, that I may apprehend that for which also I am apprehended of Christ Jesus. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus." We need to be pressing toward that mark. We got to draw the line in the sand and then run for it to make it to that goal. If you're here and you haven't need to respond to the invitation, we ask that you would do so. If you need to become a Christian, do so now. If you are a Christian, but perhaps you've been stagnant, you haven't been growing, you haven't been moving toward anything, you may need to respond as well. Do so as we stand and as we do.